You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I talk to Jill Kaufman and we talk about divorce. We talk about her divorce. One of the things that I asked Jill is, why does she think that it is helpful and maybe even important for people to share stories of divorce? So that's a good question, I think. Jill describes her divorce as high conflict, and she also says that it's the hardest thing she's ever gone through. We talk about what her divorce process was like, how she made the decision to move forward, and what life is like for her and her family now. Now, I don't think that I've ever actually met anybody who would describe the process of divorce and getting a divorce as something they enjoyed, but it's a thing that a lot of people go through every single day. And so that's probably a reason that it's worth talking about. So if you're ready, let's do it. Jill Kaufman, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat?
I am so ready, Amy. Thank you for having me.
I'm happy you're here. So I start all my conversations asking my guests what part of the world they're in. So where are you talking to me from today?
Okay, so that's not an easy answer. I am in Colorado, but I spend summers and winters here and spring and fall in New Jersey.
Oh, all right. Very good. So you move around. I love it. I love it. I have goals like that. I do. In a second, we're going to start the official interview, which is not about bouncing around the country, but I have one more warm-up question. We say laughter is the best medicine. What is something that you can count on to bring laughter to your day?
So I think it's my dog because she makes the funniest expressions when I have no idea what she's thinking, but there's stuff going on in her head and she'll just stand there and not move all of a sudden for no reason. And she'll look at me. And so my dog makes me laugh a lot.
I love it. I love that. I love it. I love it. Okay. So the topic of the day is we're going to talk about divorce. And whenever I talk to somebody about divorce, I actually like to back way up and talk about the beginning of that relationship to put it in some context, because the divorce is just one part. Share with us, if you will, some about how you first met your husband and how long you were married.
So I met my husband in college. We didn't start dating till outside, like 4 years outside of college. And we got married, we got engaged within 10 months of starting to date. And we were married for 20 years when we got divorced.
All right, that is a complete marriage in my book. Relationships are actually one of the most common stories that I share, changes in relationship status. And so I think that everybody knows somebody who's gone through divorce, even if they haven't gone through it themselves. I know I do. People in my family, I just think it's a normal part of life. The question I thought about talking about with you on that is, like, what about divorce stories do you think is helpful? Like, how and why is it still helpful for people to share their stories of their experience?
So when you're going through divorce, it is extremely isolating, because unless you have a whole bunch of people who are going through it at the time that you're going through it, nobody can really understand. I mean, you really need people around you who get how overwhelming and devastating and difficult it is, or else you feel like you're the only person who's done this. You feel like you're a failure. You feel like all your other friends have these happy lives and you're the one who's really struggling, and it's really difficult. So, you know, having people around you when you're going through this is really one of the best things that you can do, but it's hard to get that. You know, they don't pop up. Yeah.
It is. And one of the jokes I used to have, a similar thing. So I was a stepmom before I was a mom. It's a similar thing. Super, super common situation. Everybody knows the story of a stepmom. Everybody knows a stepmom. But when you're going through it, you're like, wait a minute, am I the only person on the planet who is experiencing this right now? Because you may not know people who are in the same situation. And I used to like have a joke. I was like, people, divorce attorneys should be advertising in the garden section of Home Depot, because it's like this huge industry. this huge industry. But when my friends and people I knew first had the thought about, oh, you know, I'm not sure about my marriage, maybe I want divorce, they don't know who to talk to. Even though there's tons of people out there, they have no idea. Maybe they're not ready to talk to their partner about it. Maybe they're not ready to talk to their family and friends about it, and they don't know where any of those resources are. So I agree with you that it's very, very helpful, but I'm not an expert, so that's why I asked. So let's dig in. You were married 20 years. Tell us as much or as little as you might want to share about the sort of the high points of the life you built together: kids, pets, hobbies, houses, jobs, all the random things that we build in 20 years.
Yeah, so we had three kids who are now all adults and doing really well, thank goodness. And we didn't ever have a dog. I have one now, but I didn't then. We bought a house together. We raised our kids in the Jewish religion because they all had bar mitzvahs, and we did all the regular things that couples do, and had a nice social life. We had friends but without getting too much into the details, we did not have a really good marriage. We were not we fought a lot. We went to counseling, marriage counseling. I'm a marriage counselor. I highly recommend marriage counseling. It did help us stay together longer. I think we saw four different marriage counselors, and the fourth one we saw for 4 years. And so we really tried, we really tried to get to a better place. And we learned a lot. And, by the end, we both kind of said, I had actually went back to school, to graduate school, to get my master's in social work to become a therapist, because I knew at some point we were not going to be married, because it just wasn't improving in the way that it should have improved. And but I didn't want to hurt my children, so I was like, I have to stay as long as I can. And we made the best of it. And but when my oldest was 18, we both kind of talked about it, and that's when it happened. I think my ex would have stayed. I think there are people who will stay in a situation that's not that good. I couldn't, because I had the experience of my parents, who were in a terrible marriage for f over 50 years until my dad died. So I was like, there is no way I am going to repeat that. So I knew that I, at some point, we couldn't stay together. So, and a lot of people ask, like, should you stay for the kids? How long should you stay? And, now that I have so much experience in this field, it is really not good to stay for the kids. And I probably should have. We should have done that earlier than the 20 years. But the good news is they're all doing well. We're doing well. We actually get along now. We had a high conflict divorce at the time, but we've repaired that and we get along. So there's a good story out of that.
All right, there's a lot in there. I'm going to highlight some of those things, because I think there's a lot to break in there. You have clearly told this story before, because you just went through like a million details, which was probably many years of your life, in a very well thought out, concise, like sort of wrap up. So you did a lot of therapy together, which I think is very interesting. And also, so I'm going to back, I'm going to modify this question. You guys were of similar faith, and it sounds like there was faith in your marriage. Does this mean that you did you have a traditional Jewish wedding and do premarital faith-based counseling before you got married?
No premarital counseling. I mean, this was a long
Okay.
time ago, but we did have a traditional, very traditional Jewish wedding.
Okay, all right. So the only Jewish wedding I've been involved in, there was like a little bit of like getting to know the rabbi, but so you didn't
Yeah,
do that.
there's a thing you meet before the m wedding with like all the men we meet together, and
Okay.
there
So
was
you
that.
did that. You did all the things that were asked of you of the faith. And then what was the thing? So here's the question. If you remember, what was the very first thing that got you guys into a counselor's office?
Oh gosh, that's a good question. I'm trying to think of the first counselor we went to. Well, we were explosively fighting in front of the children.
Okay.
So both of us did not think that that was good, and we started working with somebody. And I found it. I'm trying to. I must have just gotten a recommendation from somebody.
Okay, so this was, and so this was so long ago that, and do you remember, do you have any concept of how long into the marriage it was that you started?
Yeah, so that first one was probably 8 years in.
8 years in. All right, very good. So I think this is a decent time for me to pause and talk directly to the people who are watching and listening and invite you into the conversation. I post discussion questions on social media so you can join us there, respond to the questions, share your opinion. I'll be there to interact with you. Other people from the Imperfect Adulting community will be there in the comments. Jill might pop in and say hello. So join us there. And if you're not already following the show on social media, links are in the show notes, of course. All right. So you do a lot of counseling, and in my opinion, just an opinion, and I think it's interesting that even today, with your professional experience, you do take the time to sort of like say that, you know, it's like, hey, we tried, we really did that. There's a lot that comes into like thinking about relationships and breaking them apart. I am a person who today doesn't apply a moral value to relationship status, but I will admit I worked hard to get there. My parents were divorced, and I realized that I was carrying around a concept of getting married is good and getting divorced means something went wrong. And so I worked through that for myself. Today, or back then when you were married, what would you say your mindset and preconceptions about marriage and divorce were like, maybe before you got married or at the beginning of your marriage?
It's so funny when you think about how you were feeling before you got married, because I was really just focused on like my experience, and my parents were a lot older than me. I was like, I had a brother who was 15 years older than me and a brother who was 11 years older than me. So I was like, they were old parents when I was growing
Okay.
up. And I really did not want to be an old parent. And I was always worried that my dad was going to die. You know, like he was 44
Okay.
when I was born. And so like, that was a priority for me. And so I put pressure on myself so that I was not going to be later getting married. And so at one point I was like, I need to get married soon. And I was like 23,
All
which
right.
is now it sounds like ridiculously young. And you know, I think that we all come into, you know, our adulthood with these things from childhood that really impact us, and they're not rational and they don't make sense, and they make you do things and make decisions for your life that are maybe not the best decisions, you know.
It's actually, there's a word for it, and it's not in my mind, but I heard somebody describe it. But that concept of a timeline or a calendar that you're supposed to be following that we all kind of have. Like, it's like, I need to graduate by this time. I need to get a job. I need to be married. It puts a lot of pressure on us, and we don't even notice it. We don't even notice it. And it does change depending on who you are. And some people are fortunately very immune to it, appears, and lucky for them, right? They don't do that. But I think it's reason. I think that a lot of people feel that they're like, this is the time. Now is the time. And it does sort of feel like that when you're in your mid-20s to mid-30s. It's like everyone is doing the same things. It's like, now we're graduating, now we're getting married.
Well, I think it's changing though, because you know, I have kids 25, 29, and 31, and they don't feel that pressure like they
That's
do. I
good.
think it's gotten older the year, you know, when
Yes.
you're starting to feel that pressure. And some people don't even want to get married. So I think things are different than when I was going through this, because everybody just, you know, got married, had kids. I mean, they wouldn't even got a job right out of college, married kids. You know, it was just kind of you follow along. They're not doing that.
And good for them. No, it definitely, I think that, yeah, no, I'm definitely not an expert on it. I've got people who have gone through it, kids who have gone through it. My stepkids are both married. And then the younger ones are still at the point where they're like, never going to do that. Never going to do that. Not going to happen. So actually, it might not be marriage. It might be they're saying they're never going to be parents, but whatever. They're in their Peter Pan phase of early adulthood. So what would you say your mindset is on about marriage and divorce now, having gone through it yourself with your reflection on what your parents went through and your professional experience?
So I think that marriage is amazing if you have the right person, right? I think that you really, and you don't know the right person right away. You it takes time for you to know, get to know someone. And I tell people, I say 9 months to a year and a half, but really you don't know someone for, give them at least a year and a half when before you decide that this is someone you're going to marry. Because, especially when you're young, you don't like understand who really you are, and to be together for a certain amount of time, I think is really helpful. And then you can go through tough times together. I was just talking to my friend whose child, her daughter is dating someone, and she was complaining about the person. And she said, and what I said to her is, this is the best. You're seeing the best of the person in the beginning. So like you're not it's not going to get better, it's so if it's not great in the beginning, that's a problem. You know what I mean? And so you really have to go into this decision rationally, not emotionally. And that's very hard to do. I just don't
It's
think
very hard to do because not only like we're showing the other person what we think is the best, what we think they want us to see, you know, what all of the things, and that's happening from both sides. It's very confusing.
Yes.
And that's the process of courtship. You don't like walk up to somebody and say, "Hi, here are my problems."
No.
That's not what we do. That's not what we do. And I'm not saying that we should. I'm just saying it is hard to see it because it's not how we're going through it 100%. So you describe your divorce as high conflict. I have an idea of what those words mean, but share with the people who are listening and watching what you mean when you say that your divorce was high conflict.
Well, so we both didn't know what we were doing. This is 2012, and there weren't really a lot of divorce coaches out there, so nobody was telling us, to do that. So we both, well, I hired an attorney, and he was like, "You hired an attorney, then I have to hire an attorney." And I'm like, "Well, I thought you're supposed to hire a divorce attorney. Like, that's what I thought you do." But then immediately we were adversaries because the attorneys take control, and he was scared, I was scared, and they're like, tell, you shouldn't talk to each other. You communicate through us. And, it was not good. Like I remember one time he told me, don't buy so many nuts, where you're living together, going through divorce and you're spending money on attorneys. And he's telling me not to buy nuts, and I'm like, I don't think the nuts are going to be like what breaks us in this. Like you're just so scared and nervous about everything. Our kids saw things that they shouldn't have seen, and you know what I mean? Like it was just a mess. And so, in the end, we ended up coming up with a solution that worked. And I actually didn't listen to my attorney, and she made me sign something saying, I suggest that you agree to this. And 13 years later, I'm still happy I signed it because we would have been in court. My ex was a financial advisor. He wasn't going to, part with things that he didn't want to part with. And I wasn't, and I was okay being a little bit more flexible in that. And so, we did the right thing and we're both doing well. You know what I mean? So, everything worked out. But if I had listened to my attorney, I would have been end up in court. And do you know how horrible that is? That
It
would have
can
been.
be really, yeah. I mean, one of the things I share with people is I'm like, I've never heard anybody. I know a lot of people have been through this process in a variety of ways. And no matter how you do it, it can be, it's a complicated, well, with the one thing, like if you're able to do just the forms, you don't have any assets, you don't have anything, you're just filing the paperwork at the courthouse, there's no kids, there's nothing. People are pretty non-committal about that, but mediation, like any of those things, the process, and when you go to court, which is very adversarial, the process is unpleasant. The process of detangling a relationship and pulling apart the finances and all of the things. I don't know a single person who's ever come out of that and been like, you know, that was fun. Let's do it again. You know, what I want to do is spend another year of my life doing that. So,
No,
and
I just talked to someone who said he spent $2 million on his divorce.
the average, well, one of the things that the average cost of a divorce is $75,000.
Yeah, I mean, it's a
It's
big
almost the exact thing as people spend on weddings. And the thing that's, I mean, and the data on that is like, you know, pretend because it's done by divorce agents, people who, so like just take it with a grain of salt. The thing that's so interesting is that marital agreements, prenups and things like that, they have a really bad rap because they are very expensive. They cost about $15,000 maybe each, whatever it costs to do a contract in your town. And but if you put it into context, like you said, it's like you don't like anybody ever as much as you do at the beginning of that relationship. Maybe that's the very best time to figure out how you want to pull it apart. Maybe that's the time where you're going to be nice to each other, and then and you put it into context, $15,000-$30,000 compared to what it would cost to litigate a divorce, it might be a bargain.
Right, exactly.
Like
But
so.
you can also, if you have a prenup, you can get into litigation too. So
Yeah, no,
that's,
all of it.
yeah.
You can litigate anything. You can
Yeah.
litigate anything in most places. And this is not litigation, but it's one of my favorite stories. One time I had two kids, they were writing letters to Santa. They each had their own letter in their own hand. We walked to the mailbox and they fight with each other about sending the letter. And I was like, oh my God, like this is, I don't even understand. Like I'm standing right here. I don't understand what you're fighting about, but you can fight about anything if you want to. And people who are paid to help you argue with each other, they're happy, they may not agree with what you're fighting about, but if you want to pay them to do it, they're probably going to take the money
Exactly.
and do it for you.
Exactly. That's why you have to be so smart when you're using attorneys in divorce.
Yeah, and I don't even say that. That's a positive thing about attorneys. They're going to work for you. If you hire them to do that for you, that's what they're going to do. That's what their expertise is. So you guys did two lawyers. You did not try mediation.
We did mediation
You did mediation,
with
yeah.
the two lawyers there, which is
You just
also,
had everybody on, you had
yeah.
brought
Oh, yeah.
everybody in.
Very expensive. And a forensic accountant. Oh, my
You got
God.
the accountant, you've got the therapist, you've got the mediators, you did everything. No one was not invited to this event. Everybody was at the table. Okay.
Yes,
You, yeah.
but we didn't get any. I mean, we did get a little someplace when during we had like this mega day of mediation, but not until after the mediation when I started to think about, what it is that I really wanted, did I come up with a solution that my ex agreed to. And so, the mediator, the lawyers, they didn't come up with any with this. I mean, they helped us get to the point where I figured that out, but it was really a tough process, the whole thing.
But that is what the thing I was going to talk to you about next. You say it, you said in your intake form that your divorce was more difficult than anything else, including the loss of your dad and your two brothers. That's a powerful statement. Tell me more about why that is and why you say it like that.
So, of course, losing my dad and my brothers, that wasn't good,
Right.
But grief over a person is different. Other people are being very empathetic. They're coming to the funeral. They're asking you if you're okay. They're bringing you cards and, food. And, the community is there for you. When you're going through divorce, there's no one there for you. You are, in fact, feeling a lot of shame, and you're feeling, lost, and you're feeling overwhelmed. And it is just one of the most devastating feelings to go through this and feel so alone. And I had friends who were married who were really sweet to me, but I did lose a friend. And that was like being stabbed in the back. Like when you're down, you're like someone who you thought was a friend all of a sudden chooses your ex, and like that was horrible. That had never, nothing like that had ha happened to me, So like it was just, and the way things went, it was just, it was really hard. And at that point I didn't have my dad. I had my mom, which was great. I didn't have my dad. I didn't have siblings. I had some friends, but like I was really alone. And living in the house when you're going through divorce with your soon to be ex is awful, and also like what I was doing to my kids. Like you have this little baby and you're going to protect it for the rest of your life, the rest of their lives and the rest of your life. And you're hurting your children. Do you know what I mean? Like the guilt that you feel because you are hurting your children, which you're really not in the long term. You're helping them in the long term, but immediately it feels like you're hurting them. It just, all those emotions are, you can't describe what it is to go through all of that.
So, talk a little bit about why you guys were living in the same house while you were doing this. Because I think that, I mean, I have known people who've gone through that at least for a little bit of time. But I think that for people who've not known somebody who goes through that, I think that many people immediately think there's a separation of space and that you two would be in different spots.
Well, my lawyer told me not to leave the house because there could be abandonment. I
So
don't know
for
if that's
right.
true or not, but like they say that you can say you're abandoning your family or your children. The other thing they say is that you can prove that you can live on your own financially, so you're not going to get as much financially. So I was told not to leave the house by my attorney. My ex didn't want to leave the house because he ended up buying me out of the house and staying in the house, so he didn't want to leave. So, there wasn't a lot of options, and a lot of people, the higher earner can move out financially because, and a lot of times that does happen. Or if you have both of you agreeing, I mean, we put the house on the market, and we got three offers, but they were below our asking, and he wouldn't agree to them. So like you, if you're both on the same page, let's sell this and get out, you can do that. But like otherwise, a lot of people end up staying for some amount of time in the house when they're going through divorce.
All right, so to recap it, the reason was that the house is a primary asset for both people, and you didn't know how you were going to split it financially, and you didn't know what the terms of life after the marriage would be. And also, it sounds like you had kids, minority age kids. So how many kids were still living at home when you did this, went through this?
All three when we started it. My oldest went to college in September. And we were still going through it. So then it was just the two of them until we signed an agreement in December. So
How long did the whole thing take?
we started in May and we signed an agreement in December. So,
Oh, pretty fast, actually. That's
it
pretty
was
fast.
fast compared to some people.
Yeah, that sounds fast. And what did your and you do not have to answer this. You can tell me to buzz off, but what was the initial feedback from your kids when they found out this was happening versus now what they might think about it? Share with
To
me.
talk about the worst day of your life, that's telling your children you're getting divorced.
That is what all of the books say. I have never
Oh
had to
my
do it myself, but
gosh.
that is what all of the books say. They actually, people I've talked to, they say it's one of the reasons people don't do it is just how the idea of having that conversation is so scary.
Yeah, it was horrible. I'm like emotional now thinking about it, 13 years later, because it was horrible. One of my, they all handled it differently. So my middle child got a bulletin board, like a chalkboard, and started writing, not at the time, but later, said to us, I'm going to get you guys back together. I can figure this out. Let's talk about ways. What are the problems? And he's writing on the chalkboard what the problems are and what are the solutions. And my oldest was kind of just doing his own thing because he was 18 and kind of like, going to college and ignored that it was going on. And my youngest was the one who was mostly impacted because he had more years to live with us. And he was in a depression, like really depressed, until he went back to school. So we started in May, and when he went back to school in September, it was like a, horrible thing in my heart to see him like that. But he did got so much better in September when he started, going back to school, and he figured it out. But I mean, that was
Did it
hard.
surprise you, given the fact that you had been working on this for so many years and fighting and having the guilt about, and did you have a perception that they were more ready for it than they turned out to be, given how much you thought they were seeing?
Well, like it's funny because the year before, my youngest, who's very aware of like what's going on, asked if we were going to get divorced. And I told him no.
Okay.
Because at that time, we weren't. And what was I going to say? Yeah, maybe. Like I'm not going to say that to a 12-year-old. So like they weren't oblivious to the fact that our marriage wasn't good. But they didn't think that that was immediately happening because we had been together for a long time when it wasn't good. So, they after the initial, reaction, all of them, all three of them are like, this is better, like
Okay.
this was the right thing to do. And they came to that. And they, and I'm remarried and they love their stepdad and, he's got somebody and they, like they've moved on, they're doing really well, and like thank God. They've all been in therapy.
Which is a good place for everyone to be. So yeah, I mean, 'cause kids are a part of the family, but they're not actually a part of your marriage. If that makes any sense, right? And so when but kids can be very fearful that their life is changing, and it's an enormous mix-up of their life. So that it makes sense. I can't imagine. I'm trying to put myself in the position of having a kid come with the whiteboard and be like, "All right, I got this. Pros and cons. What do we need to do?" Like planning a vacation.
Oh my
That's, I mean,
gosh.
that is priceless. I'm curious, did that kid grow up to be a project manager, an engineer, like a salesperson? Like that is some serious initiative.
They are my non-binary middle child, and they are they studied video game design and is doing UX. Yeah, no, very
That
analytical.
absolutely makes sense. They're like, this is the system. These are
Yeah.
the rules. I'm going to figure it out. I see that. I see the path there 100%. I can fix it. I can build it. No problem. All right. So how long ago was this? And then you shared a little bit. You've remarried. You've shared a little bit of that. But tell us like a little bit, like how long ago was this? And what is your life like today? Not as a judgment or as anything like that, but to give people context of how your life changed. By making the decision and going through the hard part.
That's a great question. So, this was 2012 is when we, went
Okay.
through divorce, and I got married in 2021, and it's 2025. So, we've been together for a long time, even before we got engaged in 2019, and so, I was we were long distance for a long time when I was raising my kids and he was raising his kids, and so I was alone a lot, and my youngest really gave me a hard time because he was rebelling, and I was a single mom, and I went through a lot with him. The good news is that my ex and I, when there was a need to discipline him, which there was like one specific time, we sat together with him. We had the same conversation, the same punishment at both houses. And he really learned that he couldn't, pit us against each other. And he's turned out to be an amazing kid. And like, I think because we were able to do those kinds of things, it really helped our kids be okay. And so, it was really tough for a long time being a single parent and being alone a lot and just, feeling like, I had to handle everything. But and then getting married, when you don't have kids together, you're never going to be an intact family. So there's grief in that, but I'm extremely happy in my marriage and extremely happy in my life. And like I said, we go back and forth from New Jersey and Colorado. We have a pretty amazing life. And do if you would rather, this is what I tell people, if you'd rather be alone than in your marriage, then you should get divorced. If there's any way to make your marriage work, do that, because that is so much better than having to figure this out. And I have no doubt I did the right thing. And most of the people that I work with feel the same way.
So, was there a season when you would occasionally question your decision because you were alone and
Never.
divorced? Never. Okay. So,
Never.
even in the darkest time of being sort of alone, because you were divorced, but you had kids and you were alone, even then you were happy with the decision that you
Oh my
made. It
God,
was an improvement over
100%.
the
I
situation.
never
Okay.
once questioned my decision. Yeah. And
Very nice.
I don't know if everybody else feels that way, but I know a lot of people who feel that way.
I mean, I am not the person who would have the research is really kind of sketchy because we don't do there's not like the only like longitudinal study I've ever seen is from the 70s of marriage and divorce, and there's just not a lot of like impartial data. There's some small studies you have to look really carefully to see who they come from because there's a very famous study that was done on a very small group of people, and the sample is from a therapist's office, and it was assigned to the therapist. So these were children of divorced parents who were assigned to clinical psychologists. So this was not an impartial sample. And then they use this and they refer to it as a seminal study. And it's like, okay, but it's not a broad-based study. There was no one in there that was like, sure, I'll join. Things are okay. And so I think that that's another reason why it's important for people to share their stories. Because it is a very personal experience and a very personal story. So my parents were divorced. I don't even have any memories of them being together. They were divorced when I was so young. And then my husband is divorced. And with my stepkids, when they were young and in the teenage years, there was a moment where my husband and his ex-wife talked about something. And we were all just like, no, we talked to your mom. And they were like, you talk? Like, I mean, it was just like shock. Like, it was like, wait a minute, you already know this? Like, you guys are going to team up against us? And I was like, we were all like, all the adults were like, yes, we have each other's phone numbers. You will not outsmart us for another couple of years. You will eventually, but right now, we got this. All right. So, in a minute, we're going to do the final questions. I want to give you a chance to talk about what you did. You mentioned that you went back to school, you became to have a master's degree to be a therapist, and you also do divorce coaching. So, tell people what you do and how you want them to follow up with you after the show.
Sure. So, therapy and coaching is very different. Therapy is, weekly meetings where you're delving into your childhood and you're really venting and talking about your feelings. Coaching, so I really wanted to help people not have the experience that I have had when I went through my divorce. So coaching is helping you emotionally and practically. So you're starting today, going forward, how you want your divorce to go and how you can get, to where you want those goals of your divorce. And so it's really what I do with people is I help them work with their attorney more efficiently. I help them understand the process. I help them understand their goals and their priorities. And I help them communicate with their co-parent, even if it's a high conflict co-parent. I help them know what to say to their children. So there's all these things that you need help on that's different from therapy. And that's what I do as a divorce coach. I'm also a trained mediator, so I can come up with like creative solutions to put in their proposals. And it's really, really helpful. I wish I had that when I was going through divorce. And I have a book, an online course, and a group coaching program to help people as they're going through this process. And the way to get in touch with me is my website is divorcecoachjill.com. Info at divorcecoachjill.com is my email. And then I have a Facebook group that's free. We have over 7,000 people in it. It's a great group. It's called Separation and Divorce Support Community.
Very nice. All right. So that's really good. I love the way you described the impact of coaching because coaching can sometimes be hard to explain, but the way you explained it is so good because I think that it gives people a concept. It's like if you know that you want somebody to coach you through winning your tennis match, that's the goal. And when you're coaching somebody in divorce, it's like, what are you working towards? Because that changes things. Like, so if you know you want to win the game, are you going to argue about the point that you scored? Like, is this where you're going to put your emphasis or are you going to reset and try and score more points? And so that's, and the fancy word that we use is co-collaborating in the divorce, in the coaching community. We're co-collaborating with the people who we work with. You have a special offer for everybody who's in the audience, which is a 30-minute divorce clarity session. Normally, this would be $175, but people can get it by emailing you at info@divorcecoachjill.com. The best way to get all these links, guys, if you are scrambling for your pens, is to be a part of the email community for Imperfect Adulting, because then I zip it to you in your email box. So if you're scrabbling for a pen while you're listening to this on your run, it's in the show notes. But if you subscribe to the email community, the links are all in there and they come right to your email box. Jill, I want to thank you very much for that very generous offer. Are you ready for the final rapid fire fun questions?
Yes, I am
All right.
ready.
All right. So, which is your favorite to see and enjoy, a sunrise or a sunset?
Oh, I think a sunset. They're both great, though.
They are
Sunset's
both good. I
pretty.
didn't know if it was going to be a good question to tell you the truth. Like, so, like I like sunrises, but I live on the East Coast. So, I think that's cheating a little bit. All right. So, if you want to treat yourself with a splurge, an indulgence, do you think, where does your mind go? Do you think food, shopping, entertainment, travel, or something else?
Oof, that's another hard one. Travel is one of my biggest things. I love to see new places, and I have a bucket list of all the things that I want to do. So I would say travel, but a good massage is really good
There you go. I love
too.
that. All right. So, in your thinking about yourself, just your opinion of your own self, are you more of a minimalist or are you a pack rat?
I want to be a minimalist, but I end up being a little bit of a pack rat because my whole family's not here anymore. I have a whole bunch of stuff from them, and I can't part with it. So I do have some stuff in my house that I should be getting rid of, but I try to get rid of as much as I can as I go. So I wish I was a minimalist.
I love that answer so much. You're like, I would love to, but no. This is, if I'm honest, okay. But I have goals. I have goals
Yes.
of being a minimalist. I love that. That's it. Jill Kaufman, thank you so much for being an amazing guest on the show today.
Thank you, Amy, so much for having me.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously. Subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.